Welcome to the Wrestling Brethren Podcast. This is episode 393. This is all about AEW tonight. With me tonight is Jarrett Aubrey. Seth is a little under the weather, but we'll talk to him and get his thoughts next time around. But Jarrett, we sat through Revolution. What did you think? No, we'll hold off.
That's a loaded question. I'm doing good, thanks. I'm just gonna give a two-word synopsis of this pay-per-view in our intro here, and it means both good and bad. And I'm just gonna say, holy shit!
I feel like this pay-per-view was a tale of two halves. The first half was god awful, in a lot of spots. And the second half was damn near phenomenal. So good for Tony on his match placement. Anyway, he got the garbage out of the way. But we had a match of the year candidate, and it might even be winner. And we'll get to that. But man, all right. So I guess all we can do is just break it down. So let's break it down. The first match was for the AEW TNT title, and I did not see this leading off, actually, but Christian Cage successfully retains against Daniel Garcia, thanks to the patriarchy.
Yeah, there is lots of shenanigans going on in that one, as I think we probably all expected, given that, you know, he's got the patriarchy around him. There are some ugly looking stuff. The selling of, you know, Christian was doing like that, his ankle hurts, you know, kind of early on. I think he actually switched ankles at one point. Just some of the logic and the flow here just was not good. Not good at all. And the finish kind of came out of nowhere too. So it was just, pile on pile on pile of just kind of sloppy on top of sloppy.
Not to mention the finish where Nick Wayne attempted some kind of cutter through the ropes and Daniel Garcia was kind of tied up in the ropes.
Oh yeah, that was awful.
Nick kind of missed. Daniel had to sell it like he didn't. And then right into the kill switch, which I can't tell. And I'm not going to use the,
what do you call it?
Disclaimer of, I'm not a professional wrestler. Fuck it. I don't know if Christian Cage didn't go down correctly or Daniel Garcia didn't go down correctly, but Daniel Garcia looked like a folded up accordion going down for the kill switch. And that was the end of the match. And I was like, well, that was a thing that happened. And
well, it's like you're supposed to go down flat with that one.
Yeah, like
just take like the flat body bump and but no, he curled up like an armadillo and looks like he could have snapped his neck. Like, I don't know, it's just awful.
Legitimate concern. And then I guess we got to address, since we got no Adam Copeland, Matt Menard.
Oh,
well, he made an attempt. We'll say that.
But those were possibly the single worst display of clubbing forearms I have ever seen in a wrestling performance. Like, that was just swinging wildly. Half of them missed. The ones that did land kind of like didn't land. And it's like, oh, this is terrible.
Matt Menard, Shane McMahon would like to have a word with you.
Well, at least Menard's quads are intact.
Don't be stealing my shitty punches, man. Next, in probably Jarrett's favorite match of the night, for the AEW Continental Crown title, Eddie Kingston retains against Bryan Danielson in a stiff as fuck match, as you will see. But at least BD was working body parts. And if you saw the bruises on Eddie Kingston's shoulder, holy shit, man.
Well, yeah. That was pretty much, you know, a scientific classic in working a body part from Brian. But I mean, that was also the downfall too, right? Because he spent the whole match beating up Eddie's right arm, right? He was pulling the fingers, he was working the wrist, he was, you know, stomping the tricep, he was kicking the crap out of the arm and the shoulder, he was beating it up every which way he possibly could. And then you go up to one of the sequences at the end, Eddie's trying to fight off like with his left hand because his right arm is hanging limp at his side. And right after Brian landed like what, half a dozen kicks into his upper arm, and Eddie's arm is just hanging there. And then here comes Brian with the big whoa kick. And what does Eddie do? Oh, he puts up both his hands and blocks the kick. It's like, just no, that doesn't work that way. He's not supposed to lift his arm because it's dead. He can't even throw a punch. How's he supposed to block a kick? It's
like, if this was a video game, his arm would have been red.
Yes, yeah. His pain meter would have been, yes, absolutely red.
Yeah, unfortunately, this would be foreshadowing for some stuff later on tonight about no selling. Yeah, we'll get to it. I don't have the hatred for Eddie that you do. I like Eddie Kingston. I think it's a good story. I just like his realism. And as Simon Miller says all the time, sometimes Eddie doesn't know that wrestling's not supposed to be real. He just kicks it into this extra gear, whether it's his brawling or his promos or his passion. But I just like that about him.
I'll give him the stiff work, Josh. It looks great. You know, that part is good, but I mean, the dude looks like a construction foreman that hasn't lifted a 2x4 in about 15 years. And I'm supposed to buy this guy as an athlete, and it's like, oh, Jesus, like, no, it just doesn't work.
And he's a Triple Crown champion.
Yeah.
All right. And probably the most bullshit match of the night. And based on how good the second half was, I don't even remember if I know my complaints about this match, but you might spark my memory, and me just reading off the names might spark my memory. But it was confirmed, Seth was correct. The winner gets a future world title shot in this 8-man all-star scramble match. And it's aptly named because they had to scramble to put this together at the last minute. Chris Jericho, Powerhouse Hobbs, Lance Archer, Wardlow, Hook, Brian Cage, Dante Martin, and CMLL's Magnus. Now, I will say this to start us off. Big E always talks about big, meaty men slapping man meat. And that's been born out of matches where it organically happens. You just happen to have two guys booked in a match, and it's, as we say here, it's a fucking hoss fight.
Yep.
But I do not need, and this is going to sound like a pun, but it's not, I do not need force-fed meat to me in a match. Four of these guys were big, meaty men, and three of these guys were short-statured, flippy guys. And then we had the veteran Chris Jericho, who was pretty much running the match, calling out shit, whether intentional or not. But when you had the four power guys in, and the crowd's chanting, me, 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 and these guys are bouncing off of each other, nobody's moving an inch. And then instead of fight forever, they're chanting meat forever. This was supposed to be a meat madness match. They fucking trademark meat madness. Like, I don't need it forced down my throat. I can appreciate it when it's naturally happening. This was a crock of shit.
You are not wrong at all.
The sad thing is I like Hobbs. I like Brian Cage. Lance Archer, Wardlow, me, but I, oh,
Well, the thing is, where is Lance Archer been? Where's Brian Cage been? All these guys, they throw one guy in from CMLL or whatever it was, and we're supposed to buy all these guys as legit, like, title shot contenders here. It's like, okay. And then, you know, you talk about Chris Jericho, like, calling the match or whatever. And even then, when he did that, it didn't work. I think that spot when, I forget, it was him and whatever guy it was, not one of the meaty guys, but they were running the ropes and then trying to shoulder tackle the other two guys. It's like, well, they got the first one, but they did it three more times. They couldn't time the ropes correctly. And then, like, the first one, it was off so bad that Jericho hits the ropes first, and then the ropes are springing back when the second guy hits it. And he doesn't bounce off the ropes at all. It just looked terrible. And physics didn't work there. And then they're all way off for the other ones, and it just looked horrible. And, I mean, they're trying to run over guys their own size, and the other guys are just standing up to them and going, "Rah, you can't push me back." And it's like, oh, sweet mother of pearl, that just was not fun at all. And the rest was, like, they called it scramble whatever. And it's like, yeah, that was a scrambled egg sandwich, pretty much. Like, that was, it was just, that was a thing that happened, as you like to say.
Yeah, it,
And there was no questioning what the outcome was going to be. But, I mean, you had the trope of, this is why Seth doesn't like multiple man matches. Because you had the four shorter stature guys on the floor while the big men did the whole meat thing. Then they all got taken out to the floor. And then the four smaller guys came in. And even the announcers were like, it's mini meat. I'm like, oh, God. And then the four of them did the horrible bouncing off the ropes, and then it was like spot fest, one-on-one, two-on-one, whatever. And it was like, and
yeah.
I'll just say this, and it's cool that he's Taz's son and everything, but I think the aura of Hook is done, because he totally looked like he did not belong in this match.
Oh, absolutely. And they were supposed to buy him, like, he's a, the dude's in shape, but he's pretty scrawny compared to the rest of the guys that were in this match. And we're supposed to buy him, like, standing up against, you know, Hobbs and Wardlow and Brian Cage. Like, really?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Wardlow did win, gets the future world title shot. Who knows how long they're going to stretch this out, or whether or not they're going to hot shot it. I guess that'll all depend on Adam Cole's recovery, because that's where this is supposed to go, is Wardlow's supposed to win it and then surrender it to Adam Cole, which that's not. Moving on to the fourth and final bullshit match of the fourth. For the AEW International title, Roderick Strong challenged Orange Cassidy, and new.
Thank fuck.
The only, well, I don't want to say the only thing, but the problem I had here was more of the working of the injured body part, and then all of a sudden it was okay.
Yes.
Repeatedly in this match. And Orange Cassidy, I will say, has an edge over Logan Paul, because at least Orange has been a wrestler the entire time. He was on the indies. He came up. He got himself a gimmick that got over. Cool. But it's Orange fucking Cassidy. And like I've said all along with all these title defenses, how many top guys has he taken out? And he was protected in both losses of the title with the excuse of, oh, he's exhausted and his body is beat up. Why does he need this much protection? I'm glad the reign is over, but I did not get either one of his title runs. And did it really elevate the international title? If you don't care for Orange Cassidy, no, it did not.
No.
And I like him, but I was done with the bullshit.
Well, he was like the human pinball too, right? Like, he's athletic, and don't get me wrong, he can go, I hate the gimmick, that's why I don't like him, but you know, when he takes a beating, he can bounce around pretty good. And that's what he did. You know, the underdog, right? The face underdog. He gets beat up, he comes back, and he wins. So tonight he shows up with all kinds of whatever that tape is that you put on your body there, that athletic tape that, you know, is supposed to help you feel better. I don't know how the hell that stuff even works. It's like, oh, my body hurts, I'll put tape on it and it's supposed to make you magically feel better. Right. But so he's got tape like all over both sides, all over his back, coming out both sides of his body. So Roger Strong's hitting like code breakers and flipping, you know, back breakers across the knee and just destroying his back. And then, you know, all of a sudden, Orange fires up and it's like, oh no, Roderick, I'm going to stop there. No, I'm going to hit you in the back again. So he hits him in the back and he falls down and Roderick beats him up for a bit longer. And then you get the classic no sell. And then Orange Cassidy goes on the run and almost wins. It's like, you can't stand because your back and your ribs have been destroyed all match, but all of a sudden you get this burst of I'm okay and I can perform every feat under the sun. Like, that's not how the human body works.
I'm gonna hit all my signatures. Injuries be damned.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not strictly an AEW thing, but it's most noticeable there.
Yeah,
because it doesn't make a lick of sense.
Well, that, but it's done so much that it's amplified.
Yeah, it's very blatant.
Yeah.
So we did have a title change on this night. And then we got into the second half of this show. There were 9 matches. The first 4, heavy on meh.
Oh, did you not catch the surprise at the end of that match?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, forgot. We'll rewind a bit. At the end, there was a surprise appearance and a surprise return. And if you weren't paying attention or if you didn't have your glasses on, you wouldn't have recognized him because dude looked different.
Yeah.
But the returning Kyle O'Reilly comes in and congratulates Roderick. They were an Undisputed Era together. And Mike Bennett takes the shirt off his back to give it to Roderick to present it to Kyle to get him to join the group. He folds it up, puts it on Roderick's shoulder, whispers something in his ear. Gee, I wonder where they got that idea. And then he goes off and he's looking emotional as he walks back up the ramp. Wonder where they got that idea. And the kingdom is asking Roderick, what the hell did he tell you? And he's like waving him off like, don't worry about it. So we have a cliffhanger.
Was it just me, or did Kyle O'Reilly look like a homeless person?
Mountain man.
Where the hell has he been? Under a rock somewhere?
We have to take you to physical therapy. Under the troll bridge.
Jesus Louise.
Okay. So, then we got into the second half of the pay-per-view, and where the first half was full of meh, the second half was amazeballs. Almost all the way through. And it started off with a tag team match of FTR taking on the BCC of Claudio and Moxley. And holy hell.
Yeah.
Dax, I think, just by how his forehead looked initially, when it started bleeding, I think that was Hardway. I could be wrong. But based on it, unless he took like a handful of pins and jabbed them into his head, it looked like it was Hardway, maybe, as they said, on the diamond plated steps. But holy crap.
Yeah, I thought so, too. I didn't see. I mean, guys are really good at blading these days and hiding it. But I didn't.
Digging themselves.
Yeah. I didn't notice where he could have done that kind of work to himself. I thought it was Hardwood too.
Yeah. But, and this is more foreshadowing. There's going to be some blood later on, let me tell you. But, yeah, holy hell. These guys, I'm going to big up the match first. It was yeah. Phenomenal. It was just as good, if not better, than the one that was on TV. And my only problem here is that the booking decision. and I'm not saying this from a prediction standpoint because I've got the prediction right, but I don't care for the booking because you mean to tell me that FTR, an established tag team for years, and I'm not taking it, trying to take anything away from Mox and Claudio and the BCC as a group, but you mean to tell me that FTR are world beaters? They just somehow can't figure out the BCC. And it's not like they cheated. So, I mean, so apparently the BCC just has FTR's number, even though it's a put together tag team of two singles guys. Okay.
Yeah, they just got beat straight up. And that's, you know, I wanted BCC to win, don't get me wrong, but I made the prediction for FTR because, you know, if you've been watching TV the last few weeks, like BCC's just had their number and they beat them down every week.
Right.
It's like, well, they got to get some heat back here. So that's, well, it just makes sense for FTR to win this match. I guess that's not what happened.
Yeah.
But
that's what I said last night when you weren't here. But I said, I'm picking the BCC because they have all the momentum. And FTR seems directionless at the moment in 2024. They've been in trios matches. They've been in eight-man tag matches. They've even been in singles matches. But they haven't really focused on them as a tag team. So in terms of momentum and who I believe has a better future, it's BCC. And that's why I made the pick. Now, it turned out I was right. But why are we doing this to FTR?
Yeah. Yeah. But all that aside, this match, though, holy hell, what a welcome change from the first four pieces of garbage on this card. I was seriously worried because we always talk about it that, you know, AEW always puts on a good show top to bottom. You know, it might not be always the biggest stars on every show, but you're always going to be entertained all the time. And it's like they had me worried. The first four matches in a row that were kind of dumpster fires. It's like, this isn't standard AEW. And then it's like the clouds parted and the sun came out, and then FTR and BCC hit the ring and graced us with their presence and put on a clinic. It was fast. It was stiff. It was tag team wrestling. How about Claudio catching everybody out of nowhere with uppercuts? And especially, I think, was it, I can't remember which one it was, but one of the FTR guys flew off the apron and Claudio turns around and just smokes him with an uppercut. Mox was being Mox, and it was just a solid, wow, it was a very good match. I really enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, for sure. And about the doomsday device with the uppercut.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like you said, it's like the professionals came out for the second half of the show.
Yeah.
It was pretty solid wrestling after that point. So that took us to the AEW women's title match. And what's cool about this was practically the build. And I'm not saying this was a bad match. I'm saying that the build was that good. And when Deonna had just revealed in an interview recently that when she signed and came in, they said, oh, we're going to put you in a program with Toni Storm. Now, they knew that they worked together in Stardom, but they didn't know the level of the friendship, and they did not even know about the matching tattoos that was revealed and then woven into the story.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't know how deep their friendship went, and it just kind of helped to the whole build for this storyline. Now, I had said to Seth last night, I don't care for new people joining a promotion and being thrown right into a title picture, but I was okay with this to a degree because of the history and had a story. If it's got a story and I'm hooked, then I can look past that. But this was great in terms of a matchup. I kind of want to see it again. Toni did retain thanks to the help of rock and roll Toni Storm, aka Mariah May, which totally threw me off in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because part of the build was Deanna was saying, I want the old Toni Storm to show up. And Tony's saying, you want the old Toni Storm? Oh, you'll get the old Toni Storm. And then when Tony's introduced, her old theme music plays. I thought it was Toni that came out in her old gear. And then the announcers go, oh, that's Mariah May. I was like, oh, son of a bitch.
Yeah, they got me there too.
Not that I wanted to lose Timeless, but she looked so good. I thought it was Toni. I was like, God damn it.
The thighs were a giveaway.
Well, I wasn't looking down. I was looking at, I couldn't believe the hair and the get up out in the glasses. I was like, holy shit.
Well, she comes, yeah, like Mariah comes out dressed as, you know, Toni 1.0. And I'm like, how did they get her hair that long again? And then,
well, extended. Looking,
well, yeah, they were pretty straight for a second. Yeah. And then I look, it's like, wait, not as thick on the, oh, that's Mariah May. Okay. And it's like, oh, geez. Yeah, you got me. You got me. You had me right at the start. I had to think about it for a while.
I was like, you're son of a gun. So, yeah, that good match. And what is that? It's not the Storm Zero, but what is that package pile driver? Holy shit.
Oh, Jesus.
The pile drivers on this night, let me tell you.
God. You know what? We should have put in an over-under on pile drivers. We should do that for the next show.
Right?
Say AEW pay-per-view is an over-under on pile drivers because there was two or three in the FTR BCC match. There was the one here. There were a few more later on throughout the night. Like, wow.
Danny Garcia caught Christian in the opening match with one.
Right.
Cool one.
Yeah.
It's the new Canadian Destroyer.
Jesus. The only thing I was thinking about this one was, you know, you're talking about the story between the two and, you know, working together and the deep levels of friendship. They had a lot of history going on. And I kind of wish they would have drawn this out over maybe perhaps a couple of pay-per-views. Maybe we'll still get that. But even the build could have been over a couple of pay-per-views and finally having a match, but just like we kind of went right to it. They could have used perhaps more of the story and history to help build this, maybe. But it was still a really good match.
Well, considering we have a March, April, May pay-per-view cycles, we just might get a whole bunch of rematches.
Yeah, you never know.
All right. That led us to... Then we got to what will likely... And I'm just going to say it here. We were saying it as we were chatting through the pay-per-view. Match of the motherfucking year.
Jeez.
Konosuke Takeshita and Will Ospreay tore the house down. And I called this last night. I said, this will steal the show. Holy hell. If you thought Ospreay Omega, either one of them last year, was... And some people pick those as match of the year for the... This didn't even have Kenny Omega in it. How scary is that? The five-star matchmaker wasn't even involved. And this, to me, was seven fucking stars.
I was just going to say, dare I say this was even better than the Omega match. It is, yeah.
The hard-hitting strikes and kicks.
It's good. Grief.
There was a couple of points of no selling, but you know what? In this, it made sense in a bizarre way. There was a couple of spots I wasn't real thrilled with, and that's just my, I don't want to say pettiness, but it's my it's a pet peeve, so it's hard to break me of that. But the quality of this just blew right past any ill will I might have for no selling certain things. But holy cow, between the hard hitting punches, forearms, strikes, kicks, and the chain wrestling, in just the combinations, oh my god, this was amazing.
There was so much that happened throughout the course of this match. Like, every moment was filled with something, and I'm trying to remember it all because it just happened, but it was just like, it was so good. It was a long match, but it was like a flash at the same time because it was that good and that exciting. But like right off the start, like Ospreay comes at like 407 miles an hour and does that kind of that snapping Hurricane Rana. Just like, I don't even know where that came from. It happens so fast. Like, it was no, you know, spin around the body and toss the guy. It was like he ran across the ring, jumped up, hooked his legs, and snapped him. I was like, holy hell. And I'm going through my our texting here to try and pick out spots that I reacted to. And the strikes you're talking about, they're those huge wind-up, like trying to throw a baseball from the outfield wall wind-up, like forearm shots, and they were bending each other over backwards of those shots and multiples one after the other, and took a few to drop each other. And it's like the combination of the speed, the athleticism, and the power all wrapped in one. Like, I don't even know how I describe this. It's like they were beating the shit out of each other. They were high flying. There was counters upon counters. Like you said, there was chain wrestling. There was big moves. There was a couple of no sells, but it kind of almost made sense in the moment that, you know, you're getting beat up, you get that adrenaline shot, and you go. A couple of the kickouts from Ospreay where he was just beat up so bad and he just kind of barely just, it's like rolling over in bed when you're tired. Like, that's how much of a kick out it was. Just barely getting the shoulder up.
There's no kicking involved.
Yeah. It was
a rollout.
Yeah. It was a rollout. Just getting the shoulder up and turning up. There was no no kicking, no flipping up, no nothing. Just saying. And then, you know, you commented on top of all this, we're getting this glorious display in the ring when Don Callis added to it on commentary. And, you know, I think he was right. You know, this isn't the match of the night, the week, of the year. It's the match of the decade. And I think the guy might be right. It was that, to steal a line, it was that damn good.
Right. You can't look back at our notes and pick out spots because it's mostly reactions. In fact, here's our conversation during this match. Jarrett started out with, Jesus Christ, these strikes. Right? I said in predictions, this match would steal the show. Jarrett responds back with, wow, wow, wow. I said, holy shit. Kinshasa. There, one move, one spot. And then Jarrett finished it off by saying, match of the year, fuck everything else. And that was during the match still.
That was halfway through the match.
Yeah, I said, I don't care for the no sell, but shit, man. And you said, just holy shit. And then I came back with, wow, 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 wow. And then we talked about Don Callis that you just brought up. Yeah. That was it. That was our comments during the match. It was just reactions, basically. Just
reactions. I think the one spot where I first went, wow, 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 was that brain buster in the corner.
Oh, off the ropes?
Yeah, off the ropes. Yeah. That was crazy talk right there.
Yeah. If you want to know how hard hitting this match is, in the second half of the match, just look at Ospreay's back in the lower right. Like, I don't know how he functioned in the second half of this match. And Excalibur said, or maybe it was Don, that said it was just over the liver where that bruising was. And
yeah, that was Callis. I was going to comment on him saying that, yeah.
Okay. Just unbelievable, this match. And I can tell you right now, at least with 99% accuracy, how Simon Miller is going to cover this in his ups and downs. He's going to say, nothing I can do could give this match justice. If you have 20 minutes in your day, go watch this match.
And I'll give it an up.
Fuck, this is going to get a golden up.
Oh my God. If he doesn't use a warm and fuzzy in my tum-tum in that match, then something's wrong with Simon Miller. Then even he's too excited for it.
You know what? I'm going to make another prediction. He might break out the platinum up for this one.
Oh, my. That's the rare and elusive platinum up.
Yeah. That's how good this match was, people. Okay. In the next spot of the pay-per-view, as Jarrett eloquently pointed out, in between match of the year candidate and main event of a retirement match, we found ourselves with a three-way match for the AEW World title. And if this was old school WWE, this would be the Divas cooldown spot.
Yep.
But instead, we had Samoa Joe versus Hangman Page versus Swerve Strickland. And you know what? This match delivered on A, it was a good match. B, it told several layers of story. And C, it got Hangman written off TV because it was reported during the pay-per-view that he's scheduled to have some time off. So this did a whole bunch of things. It cemented Joe as just Joe. It's who he is. There are no surprises there. Hangman is super mega heel now. And Swerve is super mega babyface now. And this is probably one of the best double turns since Bret and Austin back in 97. That's how well they've pulled this off. Joe retains, defeats Hangman, Swerve protected beautifully. This was just great. And more drama and storytelling than actual match, but I think it was balanced out just well enough. And the drama and the story carried the load.
Yeah, I agree. Early on, you got the Joe, hell no, walk-off spot. You know, when the guy's coming off the top rope and he just turns and walks away. That's one of my favorite things ever. I just love that.
Hangman going for the top rope. Nothing.
Oh, no way. And speaking of Hangman, you know, he gets super frustrated. He snaps and beats the shit out of the ref out of Mike Knox. And then to your point, to writing him off TV, one of the commentators is like, well, that's got to be fines and suspensions for sure. So there's our, you know, our excuse for getting him off TV too, because he just pulled the ref down and just beat the back of his head, just mounted him on the back and just beat the crap out of his head.
That was the second ref.
Yes.
He beat up two refs.
Two refs. Yeah. I forgot about the first one.
I was he so might be gone for the summer.
Yeah. Big suspension coming. Anyway. Yeah. You know, you had some really good selling by Swerve. I think he ate a super kick, I think it was, and he just kind of leaned backwards. And then he saw, like, the eyes just go wide. Right? I was like, oh, no, you just didn't. And he comes back and, you know, starts kicking ass. Joe got to be Joe. He had hit all of his stuff. He showed the smarts. You know, Hangman showed the frustration and the snapping, and Swerve just showed the desire to be, you know, I want to win my first big championship. And he was a kind of the underdog baby facer. And it was all great. You put it all together, you throw it into the blender, and it came out like a nice milkshake. It was pretty good.
Yeah, like I said, this sets up Swerve. He was protected so well in this match. Hangman doesn't really get hurt. The heels don't get hurt by losses, you know. He's written off here, but he comes back, cuts a promo, and he's right back in it. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, especially since they had an opportunity with Nana there trying to get Swerve to use a title, and Swerve was like, no, I ain't going to do it that way.
Yeah. Right? Like I said, that just further cemented him as a babyface right there.
Yeah.
Bit of breaking news here as I've been observing Twitter. They're having the Revolution scrum. Sean Ross Sapp is reporting Will Ospreay is trying to convince Tony Khan not to pull him from the planned Dynamite match with Kyle Fletcher. So I would imagine that back contusion is worse than it looked.
Yikes. So
we'll have to see what happens in the next couple of days, but let's not burn out the new star on an injury.
Yeah.
That, you know, let's be smart about this. But anyway, yeah, so Joe retains. He's the champ. I think, if I remember correctly, I think he looked in to the camera and said, I am him. And I'm like,
yeah.
I don't think Melo's going to like that too much.
Yeah, I was going to message you that, and I just got so into everything, I forgot to mention it. It's like, did he just say that? And I'm like, oh, yeah, he did.
So we shall see. I don't know. I can't. Well, I don't know if they're going to hold off on Joe Swerve until Double or Nothing, or that we're going to run it back in April at Dynasty, or maybe somebody, maybe this will be Wardlow's spot at Dynasty. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah, I mean, given the way Joe's been promo on TV, it's like, you guys should go to the back of the line or whatever it was. Right. To both of us, like, well, no, you had your shot and you lost. Right? You didn't get the job done, so you go to the back of the line again, and maybe that's where Wardlow comes in or somebody else, yeah.
Right.
And then there was the main event.
Fuck.
And this was a mixed bag. For me, and I don't mean that in the mixed bag that was this pay-per-view. That's an entirely different mixed bag. The mixed bag, and I'm going to set my prediction aside because that's completely separate on my feelings on this match. I had predicted the Bucks to win the titles mainly for my sanity because I didn't want another goddamn tournament or interim champion or any other. Tony Khan's concocted bullshit. I wanted straight up new champs. It would have worked with their heel characters. I don't know what they're going to do now, but that's Tony's problem and my future sanity's problem. But we didn't get that. We had the feel good winner in his retirement match, his last match. All the ambiance. Seth was right. And because of this, he didn't win the record, but he won with most points because he said the champs would retain. And so he finished with 26 points, besting you and I, where I had 25 and you had 24. It was only 1 point separating each of us. But the best record of the night went to me. I was undefeated until the main event. So, if I had my way, I would have remained undefeated, but I did not get my way. So, the mixed bag is thus. We had... How do I put this? We had a lot of physicality in this match. We had a lot of accessories in this match. We had table spots galore. We had chair spots. We had panes of glass spots. And we'll get to that in a minute. But you mean to tell me, and I swear to God, this has nothing to do with my prediction. You mean to tell me that a 62-year-old man is able to kick out of not one, but two BTE triggers. I'm sorry, EVP triggers. And going through a table, which he no-sold, like he's a goddamn Undertaker. And no-sold a double super kick, which I will circle back to that in a second because that had a great spot before it happened. And even kicked out at one. A 62-year-old man. But I had to put that aside because he's an icon, because this is his last match, and yada, yada, yada. But let's get to the highlights of this.
Oh, my God.
Before that double super kick from the Bucks, they did a callback to WrestleMania 24, I believe it was. Whichever one had Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair.
Yeah, Flair's retirement match, yeah.
Yeah, quote unquote. where Shawn goes, I'm sorry, I love you, super kick to Flair, 1, 2, 3. This was, we're not sorry, we hate you, double super kick. And then he didn't even go down, let alone a pinfall. He reeled back, hopped back up like he's fucking not carrying cross, like he was Malachi Black back in WWE, rising up from his entrance. Are you fucking kidding me? Okay. And before all that, there was two table spots off the side of the stage. Sting took one. Darby took one. And then, earlier in the match, they brought out panes of glass. And they set them up on chairs. Or at least one of them was.
One, yeah.
The second one was propped up in the corner in the ring. So they got out one of the, I can't even say Money in the Bank type ladders. This had to be like two of those Money in the Bank ladders in height, like stacked on top of each other.
This was big.
A big ass ladder. And Darby Allin climbs up, not even to the top, but maybe two steps away from the top. Beats his chest like Sting. Does a swanton into the pane of glass on top of six metal chairs. One, Jackson pulls his brother away from the pane of glass. And all you heard was thud. And I just saw a clip of it before we started recording this episode. And it was from somebody who was live on site. So it was a cell phone shot. So you heard the crowd, unedited. The crowd from the time he got up there and jumped is like, ah! And when he hits the glass is like, oh! And then they fall silent because they're like, oh, shit.
That one, Josh, was if you noticed when they had to put the glass on the chairs, they had to pull the chairs apart a little bit to make the glass fit so it wouldn't break. So they were flat on the things. But when Darby went through that glass, there was no chairs breaking his fall because they were spaced apart. And he's a tiny son of a bitch. He went right through the glass and splatted back first on the ground. That was a 25-foot drop. Like flat onto his back through the glass, onto the floor. And that was thick.
Yeah. And here's what makes me believe that Dax was hard way, because the bleeding happened the same way. They zoomed in on Darby's back and his arm, and it was just little dots of blood at first. Yeah. And that's how Dax's forehead was, little dots of blood. But as they started moving, or at least as Dax started moving, and as Darby was just laying there dead, thank God he sold it, right?
Yep.
I don't think he had a choice.
No.
But then all of a sudden there was a lot of blood, a lot of blood. Yep. And even post-match, Sting said, I wonder how many stitches it's going to take to close this up. A lot of blood. And then Darby himself even said, hey, I said I was gonna kill myself in your last match, but I'm still breathing. I was like, I don't know how, man.
That kid's crazy. Well, it was pretty much, sorry if I'm jumping in, but I mean, Darby goes through the glass and he was pretty much dead for the rest of the match. Mm-hmm. Like they start the match.
Realism.
Yes, right? Imagine that. You know, he gets chucked off the stage. Sting goes through a table on the other side of the stage. They drag Darby into the ring. He pinballs off of that ladder before setting it up and going through the glass. And then it was just the Bucks and Sting for most of the rest of the match. And I was trying to think of all the things that happened to Sting in this match. He did the stage spot. He went through the glass. They put him through another table. Beside the ring, what happened?
Two EVP triggers.
Yeah. A couple of double super kicks. Like, it wasn't just the one there for the finish. There was one earlier, I think, too.
Did they hit the TK driver on him?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
Like, they did everything to Sting. Like you said, he's
kicks out of every finisher and every signature. Fantastic.
Yes. And the guy's 62, but I mean, he took all of that. He took it all.
Yeah.
Right? And even regardless of if he no-sold it or not, he was able to no-sell it.
And you know what? quick correction. We've been saying 62 for a long ass time. He's 64.
64. Okay. You know, I thought he was closer to 65, but
in our brains and we forgot the years passed.
Yeah, the time continues to move on. Yes. But the point is this older gentleman still operating at a very high level. He was doing stinger splashes, a good moment at the start of the match where him and his kids as the younger versions of Sting were all splashing both Jackson's in each corner. They all hit stinger splashes on both of them. All the stuff that Sting did through the course of this match, like, how does this guy do this, take these bumps at his age, and then have the energy to do the no sells, to hulk up, to go through the table and then push his way out of the debris like he's stepping out of the apocalypse? And it's like, he was great. Like he said in that epic introduction, he says, everything I have left, I'm bringing to Revolution, right? And he did it. He did all these spots. He took all these bumps. He got beat the hell out of him for almost half an hour. It was crazy. And then he was barely gassed cutting his promo at the end, too.
Right. Darby was sucking wind, man.
Well, okay, I gotta, you know, give him a little break because he took a 25-foot drop through glass, and you know he probably had the wind knocked out of him. That's okay, right?
That's why Sting didn't do the glass ladder spot, because he would have kicked out at one.
Yeah, Jesus, he just would have popped right back up.
Will Ospreay rolls out at 2.999. Sting kicks out at one with authority.
Yeah. I get all the points you made about some of the no-selling and all that kind of stuff, but it's like, this is Sting's last match. They're going to make it a spectacle, right? And I was okay with all of it.
If it wasn't for the titles, I would have picked Sting too. And I would have been fine with how this went. I would have overlooked everything. But the titles were on the line, and now we got to fucking figure it out. Well, we don't, but Tony does, and Tony doesn't have a good track record with that shit.
Well, it's almost like the titles were secondary. I forgot through the course of this match, I even forgot this was a title match. This is a bloody spectacle, and Sting is doing stuff he hasn't done for 20 years, and it's fantastic. And I just got lost in all of that. And it's like, yeah, did he go through a table and hulk up? Yeah. Did he eat two EVP triggers and kick out at one? It's like, yeah. I'm okay with it. It was fun. It was fun. That's all that really matters, is that we have a good time watching these things. And yeah, it was so good. It was good. Was the match perfect? No. Was it possibly sloppy in some parts? Of course it was. But it was fun. It was really fun. And what a way to go out is to do all of those things. And with your boys and keep ticking, right? And as far as like after this match goes, it's, you know, it's an opportunity for Sting to perhaps come out on Dynamite, you know, because they cut his promo off at the end of the pay-per-view.
Well, right? Yeah, it'll be up on YouTube tomorrow.
Oh, of course. Yeah, he's like, well, I'm getting cues. I have to wait. And then boom, screen goes black. So yeah,
now there's going to be a 30-second break.
Yeah, it'll get posted, but I mean, they'll get a chance to tell the story of Dynamite. And he'll have a chance to say a proper goodbye, probably, or another proper goodbye. But I can see this, like, you got to find a new partner there, Darby, and maybe Sting helps him do that. He sticks around, makes a few more appearances, that kind of thing. I can see them doing that. But again, this was just a fun match, and I could put all the rest. It was like Hogan and The Rock at WrestleMania. You knew it wasn't going to be an amazing wrestling match, but you were there for the environment, for the crowd, for the spectacle, for the fun of it. And that's kind of, I'm not saying these guys are on par with Hogan and The Rock in that match, but it was like that. It was that atmosphere, and it was pretty cool. So I enjoyed it. Even with all its little flubs, I enjoyed the hell out of it.
I pretty much indicated how predictions went, but I'll say it again. I went 8-1, 25 points. You went 7-2, 24 points. Seth went 7-2 also, but was the point winner of the night thanks to Mr. Steve Borden. So, and the announcement that we're getting another pay-per-view tacked onto the calendar, so there will be two in April, WrestleMania and AEW Dynasty. And before tonight and the announcement, they said, oh, Dynasty will probably be in the Midwest since they are in Peoria, Illinois on Saturday. And I was like, oh, we have a high probability that Jarrett's going to be pissed when this match is announced. And yep. Then they said St. Louis, Missouri. And as a Chicagoan, all I can say is fuck St. Louis. They don't deserve shit. Whether it's the Cardinals, the Blues, the Rams back in the day, fuck them all. They don't deserve that shit. Although I will say Peoria is closer to St. Louis than Chicago, but what the fuck ever.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So that's my thoughts on that. Yeah, so we just have another pay-per-view of the calendar, more points to be had. And we will see if Dynasty becomes the equivalent of Backlash after a WrestleMania or the pay-per-view following WrestleMania, where it's a whole bunch of rematches. And it got to the point where it was such a trope that WWE even named it one year WrestleMania Backlash.
We had fun with that one.
Right? All right. After that exhaustive 4.5 hours, any final thoughts?
Yeah, just like I said at the start, I'm really happy the second half picked up because the first half was pretty garbage. And I was, you know, I even watched the kickoff, and the matches on the kickoff were no screaming hell either. So here we are, you know, 6 matches in, and I'm like, oh, this needs to get good real quick. And then my prayers were answered.
I did not watch the kickoff, but I did have a problem with the kickoff. We have story and a feud between those women, and they couldn't be on the main card. What the fuck, man? They've been building this between these four women for weeks and weeks and weeks, and they're in the fucking kickoff.
Why couldn't they do the meat scramble on the kickoff show and switch that up? Yeah, I get it. But I mean,
had zero story and zero build.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, we had a great tag match with, you know, BCC and FTR. You know, we had a match of potentially the decade. We had a great Samoa Joe match. We had, you know, the spectacle of Sting's retirement match. Like that last half was the first half was like a 3, and the second half was like a 9.5. So yeah. There you go. That tells the story of that one. I'm glad I watched it.
I don't want to say, you know, it wasn't god awful. Like, nobody's going to say the first 4 matches were the drizzling shits or anything like that. You can't with people like Christian Cage, Bryan Danielson, Chris Jericho. You know, you can't. There's no way. But they came pretty damn close.
That's fair.
And I'll say this. Between Christian Cage and Chris Jericho, you can't say it with Sting, but holy hell, the age comes through in certain spots. And you know, there's nothing wrong with that. These, you know, Father Time is undefeated, but holy hell.
Yeah. Yeah, Jericho was looking at his age at some point. Christian actually did some flexing and looked in probably the best shape he's been in his career, but you can still tell he's getting older.
And how about that leap over the corner post to the floor by Christian?
Oh, yeah, come on. Yeah. So
like
good.
Like I said, it wasn't all bad in the first half. There were just only a handful of good things.
I might go out on a limb and say that the 8-man, the meat scramble might have been the drizzling shits. And then, you know, the other 3 matches were just kind of clumpy. And then the rest of the show was fantastic.
All right. Well, our next episode will be our Raw and NXT recaps as we continue the road to WrestleMania. And we will be on the lookout for any promos cut on social media. So until then, once again, thank you for listening, downloading, and subscribing. We will talk to you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode. You can subscribe to the Wrestling Brethren podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix to hear the latest discussion from the Wrestling Brethren. Visit the mothership, if you will, at twbpodcast.com, the online home of the Wrestling Brethren podcast. Let us know your thoughts, questions, and comments on Twitter /X at twbpshow, on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthesquaredcircle, and on Instagram at the Wrestling Brethren. You can follow Jarrett on Twitter /X at TheBaconRev. You can follow Seth at LordXandrax. And you can follow Josh at SouthpawJosh. Thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you soon with more from the Wrestling Brethren.